We've all done it. Stock our fridge with leafy greens and good intentions, only to have our future self sacrifice quality nutrition for the convenience of takeout. Keep your body and mind nourished all day with a whole body meal shake from Ka'Chava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. But the best part? It actually tastes delicious. With 6 indulgent flavors to choose from, it's easy to make a superfood-packed shake. From chocolate, vanilla, and chai, to matcha, coconut acai, and strawberry, you've got endless ways to personalize your Ka'Chava. Whether you prefer it straight up or enjoy adding fruit, peanut butter, nut milk, or even iced coffee, with every 2 scoops of Ka'Chava, you're getting 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Shop now through December 2nd to get 30% off your first purchase of 2 or more bags with code NEWS at Ka'Chava.com. That's 30% off for a limited time at kachava.com, code NEWS.
Well, hello and welcome to this edition of The Bullpen. As always, I'm James Roy. With me is Tom Chavria. Tom, how are we feeling tonight?
So I started this tradition 3 games ago because there was a drink in my hand when it wasn't pretty. There was a drink in my hand when it looked like it wasn't going to happen. And there's a drink in my hand tonight because flat out the Texans make me drink. And, you know, it's been up, it's been down, it's been left, it's been right. But here we are, 3 games later. The legend that is Davis Mills has found a way to lead this team to 3 consecutive wins.
Well, I'm looking at the Instagram comments already flowing in. Glad that the Instagram chat is active. It says, Houston, we are a problem. Mills Mafia, let's go Texans, baby. All of it is pretty accurate to how it feels right now to be a Texans fan. After beating the Bills, which honestly, to be fair, I've been pretty upfront about it. I felt like this was a game that was very much the Texans to lose. I didn't think that the Vegas line on this one was very accurate. I think that Vegas had to take Buffalo by that much. But historically, like even looking at last year, like this is a very similar Texans team. I think some people obviously don't forget because they still hate Bobby Slowick to some extent. But this Texans offense was inept. In that game, it was a lot of defense and like, you know, short spurts of offense. I think this game, the offense looked like, I think, better than it did in that game to some extent. I mean, the Bills defense is not very good at stopping the run. So if you can run the ball at all, which was going to be the big question, was can the Texans get Woody Marks going? This was always a winnable game, in my opinion. But starting out, just right off the jump, how do you feel about this game just overall? Just what's your biggest takeaway from it?
My biggest takeaway has been like what this team has been all season. And it's really, really phenomenal defense. And if they can get just enough offense, they can win a lot of football games. We've said that I don't know how many weeks. You know, this has always been about how much can they score. And will it be enough? Because you know the defense is going to keep them in every game. And tonight was really a game that we hadn't really seen all season where the defense was like, nope, we're finishing this one. They've had other games. I mean, they were 0-5 in one score games, you know, up until, you know, the last couple of weeks. And it was, they had an opportunity to close the door and, you know, something happened, you know, a weird fluke play, whatever. A quarterback scramble, and they lost the game. Tonight, the defense would not be denied, and it was a lot of fun to watch. I mean, I've never seen Josh Allen look as bad as you could make Josh Allen look. This was a dude that ran for 3 touchdowns and threw for 2 more last week, like 4 days ago. And now, I mean, he got out-dueled by Davis Mills.
He got out-dueled by Davis Mills. And I mean, I looked a few weeks ago, and one of the things that made me really confident the Texans could win this game was that the Dolphins, and I know that it's a divisional game for the Bills, so like you have to, you know, look at it through that lens, but the Dolphins did pretty much the same thing to Josh Allen just 2 or 3 weeks ago. And so I was like, the Texans defense can do far more than that to Josh Allen. It's just going to be a matter of if whoever at that point, obviously CJ had suffered a concussion. It's just like a matter of whoever's playing quarterback for the Texans, can they effectively move the offense and take advantage of the run game? I looked at the very beginning of the game. We saw a run game that was averaging 8.3 yards per carry. And we saw a Davis Mills that would come out of a play action rollout. And aside from a Cade Stover drop, I mean, there were some throws that he was missing by a mile. And if he hits those throws, we're talking about a dominant game overall. But even with that happening, this Texans offense was able to take it with the way the defense was playing. They were able to make those mistakes, kind of get into the game. And then Davis Mills, you know, as much as he missed on some throws that he should have made early and throughout, I mean, he hit throws when it mattered. He protected the ball. Outside of hitting a Buffalo Bills defender in the back of the head trying to hit Higgins as part of one of his, you know, not great throws, which, by the way, Higgins needs to turn back to that ball and draw the pass interference. That's like wide receiver 101. If your quarterback underthrows the ball, easy PI if you just get back to it. And it seemed like he stumbled on it. But either way, watching the offense go through it, it gives me a different conclusion than it does some other people. Obviously, I temper this, you know, statement that I'm about to make with the fact that there's a very small portion, maybe growing, maybe not, of people that are like, well, Davis Mills is 3-0 as a Texan starting quarterback. Maybe the Texans should just stick with Davis Mills. I think that's a really dumb train of thought, but the conclusion that I get from watching this game is that it's not that literally anyone could do it, but I think that you kind of go down that train of thought of like, if Davis Mills is doing this in this offense as it's progressed, obviously, I can't emphasize enough, this offense has progressed. If you compare this week and last week and the week before to week one, it's not a CJ Stroud problem versus Davis Mills problem. It is the offense was awful then, and now it is really good. So the conclusion is not that Davis Mills suddenly made this offense, you know, better. It's that this offense has progressed to a point that we should expect that when CJ Stroud is back, he can step into this offense and he'll hit those throws that Davis Mills was missing. And we've seen CJ Stroud with time. CJ Stroud with time is 10 times better than Davis Mills ever will be, which is amazing considering how good Davis Mills was in this offense. I think it's a sign of hope that when CJ Stroud is back, this offense will be what it needs to be in order to push this team into the next level. That brings me to another talking point, which is that, and before I say that, because I feel like I'm going to start rambling, if you guys are in the chat, we obviously have H-Town chat legend Brandon Halam in the chat. If you Instagram or wherever you're at, if you have something to say, drop it in there. We'll try and address all the comments as they come through. This is the point of going live, is so that you guys can participate in the chat. So we'd love to hear what you have to say. But I've made this comparison, and apparently a lot of other people made it before me, because the comments and the quote tweets are filled with, I've been thinking this. Here's a screenshot of me saying this. This season, last season, whenever. 07 Giants, a team that had a stellar defense. Eli Manning, I say he's a Hall of Famer because of what he was able to do, but I think that you can obviously look at what he's done and you can understand why he was not a first ballot Hall of Famer. He obviously was not the reason that Giants team did what it did. It was all defense, and Eli Manning was just very serviceable. This is a Texans team that is careening towards being a 6 or 7 seed if they can play their cards right and getting into the playoffs as a very low seed with a really good defense and what could, by the end of the season, look like a very similar level of offense to what the Giants were playing that year, which is just serviceable. It's enough to make the defense able to get through. Other examples that people gave, 2000 Ravens, 85 Bears, just teams that, like, I've told you before, I don't like making comparisons to the 2000 Ravens because of Trent Dilfer. I don't want to. I'm more comfortable with the comparison of CJ Stroud to Eli Manning than Trent Dilfer. But I making that comparison, I think there's a path where, like, this defense is next level. It is one of the best defenses to ever do it if this trend continues, if how they've played carries out through the rest of the season. A defense like this has never missed the playoffs. So watching this offense progress, I think we could reach a point where it's time to make that comparison, and it's time to say, do we still have a shot at the aspirations that people had at the beginning of the season for different reasons? So what do you think of the comparison between, say, the 07 Giants and this Texans team, just based off of what we've seen so far?
I think they're horrible. I really think they're horrible. And I'm going to say it like this. If you feel that the Texans offense is going to be that bad, provided that they're able to keep CJ clean, I think that's a huge disservice to CJ Stroud. I know what we haven't seen, right? We haven't seen a dominant offense. We just haven't. But I think one thing that has to be said in these three games, the O-line has been revamped. I mean, tonight we saw something we've never seen. We got Titus Howard at left guard. And I mean, I really like that. You know, Ursary got nicked up, but I think Ursary is going to be fine. You know, Trent Brown at right tackle looks really good. I mean, if the offensive line can give him time, if the offensive line gave Davis Mills time, he had wide open guys everywhere that he just was not hitting. And that's crazy to me, because you talked to it. You said, hey, CJ's in this game. This is a different animal. CJ finishes the Denver game. That's another win. I think this team is better than the teams that you compared them to. And I think there's a scenario where they could finish better than the teams you compared them to. I don't necessarily think, and people are going to look at me and go, Tom, you're crazy, but the division is still there to be had. Indy has to play the Texans twice. Indy has to go play a desperate Chiefs team. And I think there's enough games left to go walk them down. Nobody believes in the Colts. If you ask them, no Texan fan, who they played, they ain't played nobody. And you start looking at this Texan team, and you start looking at the teams that they have in front of them. If the Colts are a fraud, the rest of this season looks totally different, because you could go get a win in Indy and then not see them again till the last game of the season. And who besides Kansas City do you fear?
It's really just the Colts. I mean, that's really the only other team.
And then you look at the rest of their schedule. They still have some tough games they got to play. What do they finish at? Yeah. They started off hot, but I mean, if this offense gets going, if CJ comes back off of, I know concussions are not good. I've never had one. I know it's very difficult, but I mean, physically, I think he'll be fresh. You know, not taking punishment for a couple weeks, and they're able to protect him and give him time. Brandon, the Chargers got smoked by the Jaguars.
I disagree with Brandon here too, as well. I
saw that.
I've counted the Chargers, Cardinals, and Raiders in the same category as, and I'd say the Chargers should be an easy win for the same reason that I thought the Texans legitimately were being underestimated against the Bills, which is that, as we saw in the wild card last year, I mean, Justin Herbert, if you pressure him, is an awful quarterback, which is the case with most, but like to another level, he is just not good at the game of football when you apply pressure. And the Texans defense is really good at applying a pressure that makes the Chargers offense inept. Whether or not their defense has improved between then and now is one thing or another. I mean, the Texans offense needs to take a few steps, but that game is to me a game the Texans should win. 100%.
I just look at the rest of their schedule and I go, look, as bad as it's been, and it's been bad, and the offense has been bad, you know the pieces are there for it to be good. I look at the Texans offense and you compare them to, say, that Giants team, right? I feel like a CJ Stroud can do more things for a team than Eli Manning can. Eli Manning was a statue. I don't necessarily have the greatest opinion. I think he got far on his last night. I really do.
I mean, to be fair, I think Eli Manning, and obviously we've seen a whole career from him, as far as we can tell, at every level has been better than Arch Manning. Arch Manning obviously hasn't played at the pro level, but like if we're talking about getting by on a last name, I think to say that is to say what we're seeing from Arch Manning right now, as opposed to like,
I think it's a little too early for that. Year one.
Eli, to his own credit, led the league in fourth quarter comeback. Eli has a similar conversation to Tony Romo, I think, where a lot of people talk down on Tony Romo because he couldn't get it done in the postseason, or that they don't like him or they think he's just average. But Tony Romo was one of the highest rated regular season passers and was excellent in the crunch time, like in clutch when it mattered in the regular season. At least he led the league in fourth quarter comebacks, or was up there with Eli Manning at points. So it's tough for me to say that guy's just getting by on his name, you know.
I just feel like when you compare the two, like I think when CJ's done, his numbers are going to look better than Eli. I don't know that he'll win as many titles. God, I hope so, because that means he, you know, parades in Houston, right? That'd be awesome. There was just a next level of defense and an all-time Hall of Famer, you know, edge rusher sacking Michael everyone.
Strahan. Big old yeah. Michael Strahan.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then for me, I feel like Nico Collins is going to be a better wide receiver than anyone they had. I'll give you the running back, but I just feel like their offense is going to be able to do more when it's right. I think this offensive line, I can't stress this enough. If Trent Brown is going to be the right tackle to solidify this thing, if Ed Ingram is going to be the jewel that Nick Cassero went and got, who's only 26, who I think you could build around, and then you can put have the left side good with Ursary and Titus. Maybe you flip-flop Patterson. Jason Braddock on another show was talking about, you know, Patterson versus Andrews. He thinks Patterson is the way to go. But I mean, even if you leave it alone, if you can give CJ Stroud the time that Davis Mills got, I think he scores you probably at least 7 more points tonight. You know, it's a 30-point team. And then what defense is going to be able to measure, like, I guess I'm saying that wrong. Who's going to stop this team when their defense is going to be as good as they are?
Right. And to me, like, I like that you brought up the O-line conversation. Nico here, I have his comment up here. He was actually on Instagram and dropped this comment. I've been meaning to get back to it, but he had time to get all the way over to YouTube and put it up there, which is perfect. I could put it on the screen. Thank you, Nico. Trent Brown's emergence unlocks a lot of versatility. And if there's one thing, you know, I've been very critical of the way that Nick Cassero has built this O-line, but if there's one thing that he's given us, it is plenty of versatility if certain players play the way that they need to. So we talked about it this past week on our preview show, or on our, on our recap show, about how the emergence of Trent Brown and Jarrett Patterson creates a lot of ripple effects and what the best configuration for this O-line is. But what I like about this particularly is that it feels like anytime the Texans O-line plays really well, you go, okay, well, this configuration has to be on the field. Otherwise, the team is going to blow it. And I don't feel that way right now, because I'll tell you why. The Texans started the game with Ursary, Howard, Andrews, and then Ingram and Brown. If Brown goes out injured, okay, cool. Shift Titus back to right tackle, bring in Jarrett Patterson at left guard. I don't think much is lost there. So, like, there's levels to it. And then you can also put Patterson in for Jake Andrews if you want, if you feel like that's a better configuration. But there's layers now. There's actual depth along the O-line that gives me reason to believe that certain positions could suffer and the Texans would still be able to field a serviceable level of O-line play, which I think is going to be a big part of moving forward, looking at what you're saying and what I'm saying about how the offense is progressing and they could play at that level. It's going to be on the O-line to continue to do what they've been able to do over the past few weeks.
So are you saying this has been a Cole Popovich issue and not a Nick Cassero issue, because he's had these guys on the roster the entire time and just was using them incorrectly?
I would say that could potentially be it. I think that,
because you've been saying he needs to be out because he couldn't build an offensive line, and we're seeing the guys that are that have been in a Texan uniform the entire season look like a serviceable offensive line. To be fair,
Trent Brown has been injured, and so it wasn't until recently that he was available.
But you said you didn't need him if he got hurt, that you could put Titus over there.
Trent Brown was also considered your backup right tackle. But because they obviously don't trust Blake Fisher to do that, which, by the way, shout out to Blake Fisher. His one left tackle rep in the game was actually really good. set up that touchdown to Jaden Higgins. So shout out to him. I think I obviously I'll preface it by saying this, like the opinion of whose fault it is always very fluid because new information can be presented. So it short of like giving you a novel of basically saying that I agree with you, I'm just going to actually just say,
I agree with you
that I think the tide has turned and you have to look at it as a coordinator. And I don't know if I would say that it's Cole Popovich messing up the line. I think it's just a matter of him not properly utilizing what was had, working through it, being forced into a position to use players in a way that was more beneficial to the team. And now it's just a matter of Nick Caley being the offensive coordinator, being like, hey man, now that we know you can't put Pandora back in the box once it's open, you know, the secret's out. This is what we're going to do moving forward. We now know what we have and we should have known sooner. So I would say, yeah, we can shift at least half of that blame to Cole Popovich. I still think as much as there is a big positive right now that the way that Nick Caserio has approached building O-line can pay dividends at points. But obviously if we're looking at it throughout the season, I still am not super high on the way he did it. I just think that Nick Caserio throughout the season has, I don't want to say lucked out, but the way the game has progressed and the way that the Texans have been forced to run the O-line has now made the way he built the O-line more serviceable. So, and I'll give him his credit. He threw a whole bunch of depth at this. And I think that the Texans did a really good job of keeping the right players around to give them these options. If they had cut Jarrett Patterson, I would have been distraught and I would have been wondering who's making decisions, but they obviously didn't do that. They gave themselves that option and they finally remembered that he's not just a center. He can play guard. But on top of that, Jake Andrews was brought in by Nick Caserio. You could call it a Cole Popovich acquisition because of their connections, but Nick Caserio had to have brought him in knowing that Cole Popovich was going to want to use him. So there's some sort of combined effort. I would shift more of the blame to Cole Popovich this week. I think that that's a fluid discussion. And I think that for the past few weeks...
Tomorrow, Nico!
We'll shift through it. Yeah, maybe after next week it'll be Nick Caley's fault. Let's see. Nico's on one with having JJ Watt flashbacks. Dude, Will Anderson Jr., they were making that comparison. I was like, yeah, he's dominating. So obviously you go to the player in our history that has dominated at that position when you make that comparison. But then on the final drive, when he jumped up and swatted that ball down, I said, oh my God, he's going full JJ Watt right now.
He went for the pick.
If he pulled that down and called game, man, dude, an already excellent game from him could have been even better.
Yeah.
Crazy. Let's see. We've got some other stuff in the Instagram chat I'm going to catch up on. Let's see. Do you think Nick Caley can bring the offense to the playoffs or rely on the defense? I think we've both expressed that we think that this offense can progress, but Tom, how do you feel about it?
Oh, absolutely. I think something that we've been talking about a lot and that I think actually we're seeing is there's been progression. It's in the play calling. It's in the way that they're able to get in and out of the huddle. It's in the personnel. It's in a lot of things. I think a lot of people discredited that Nick Caley was a rookie and just assumed – because other rookies have just showed up and took off without any kind of a, you know, learning curve, that Nick Caley should do the same. Maybe the same thing could be said for Cole Popovich, and we're all just learning together. And, you know, as the season has went on, we've seen, you know, the offense put up more points. We've seen tonight we saw some gadget plays out of the offense with a backup quarterback. Like, there was going to be a wide receiver pass. It didn't work out. It was covered. And credit to Hutch for going, I don't have it. I'm going to take off and get it. Hutch did a phenomenal job.
Excellent.
Realizing, look, I could throw a pick here, and said, no, I'm just going to go get whatever yardage I can. There was another like little wide receiver, like pitch looking thing to Kirk. I thought that was innovative. Nick Caley's slowly getting into his bag. And I think as the season goes on and he gets comfortable knowing that the offensive line can hold up long enough to make some of this work, I think we're going to see it. Now you infuse a better quarterback And maybe you start turning these plays into like touchdowns, you explosives, that sort of thing. And we talk about red zone. Red zone was just an absolute, you know, horror story for the first, I don't know, 7 weeks of the season. The last 3 weeks of the season, they're scoring in the red zone. It's not a perfect thing. I mean, there's still some field goals where you're like, we needed seven right there, like earlier in the game. But
yeah,
the red zone efficiency from 3 weeks ago to now, way better.
I agree with you. I think that this offense is progressing over time. Nick Cayley's getting into his bag, and there's a lot of indicators of that throughout this season, but especially more recently. And I think some people, like I said earlier, I think some people take that as Davis Mills has come in and made Nick Cayley's offense work. But what it's a sign of, in my opinion, and we'll see if it plays out, is that Nick Cayley is figuring it out. And Davis Mills, like, you know, some people will say he's a better fit. I think Jeremy Branham had said that he's like a better fit for Nick Cayley's scheme, which is an interesting way to put it. I felt like he tried to backpedal on that with the way that he defended himself and that take. But I think that what it is that Nick Cayley is figuring out how to call a game and actually come through on what he said. I've called it snake oil early on this season. I think he's starting to actually have it materialize in his hands. He's getting real stock of what this ability to adapt an offense to the situation, to the players' strengths and everything. So I think that what we'll see when CJ comes back is he's going to come back to an offense that's progressed enough that he'll get back to what we saw in 2023. The rookie CJ Stroud that we've been chasing all season, I think, shows up more as the season moves on. And I'm excited at the prospect of, I'm obviously not probably as on board with it as Tom at this moment, but you know, Tom has been known to sell me on a lot of these things throughout time. And he's made a really good case in this episode for it. You know, the Texans pushing for the AFC South crown. The Texans play the Colts in week 18. And I think nothing would be more exciting than seeing this offense reach, you know, not peak, but like start to climb up in week 18, take the AFC South crown, and you know, keep the streak up of making the playoffs as AFC South champions, and then going into the playoffs with that momentum, carrying it in and playing offense at that level. It's hard to see this team not making a deep run if the offense can get right. So it's not about, like, I think a lot of people think the offense has to be good all season in order for this team to make a run, but like the Texans are one win above 500. They are quite literally, I think, three games down from the Colts. I think it's actually technically 2.5 right now, depending on how the Colts do. That'll change. But this is a team that, you know, the Colts are entering a tough stretch of their schedule. I don't think it's entirely out of the question to look at the AFC South crown, but I think it's also not entirely out of the question. Like, this is a playoff team. I'm comfortable saying that right now. This Texans team is a playoff team. And I think that that's all they need to be right now. All they need to do is get a seat at the table, you know, get an invite to the dance, and then they can play their best, show off their best moves, and make it shake, get where they need to go. So I think that the Texans are doing what a lot of people hate in like basketball, where like a team gets hot at the right time, like, you know, Cinderella stories in the March Madness, where you have a team who's like played well enough to get into the tournament, and then all of a sudden it's 12 seeds making a run. Like, I think that's probably where we're at. Like, a team that's finding itself at the right moment and is not seeded appropriately when the time comes. That's what I can see happening personally.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here. Right now, get up to 80% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, seasonal decor, and way more. All at Wayfair. These are Wayfair's best deals of the year. From seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, enjoy fast and free shipping with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 80% off during Wayfair's Black Friday sale. Now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
We've all done it. Stock our fridge with leafy greens and good intentions, only to have our future self sacrifice quality nutrition for the convenience of takeout. Keep your body and mind nourished all day with a whole body meal shake from Kachava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. But the best part? It actually tastes delicious. With 6 indulgent flavors to choose from, it's easy to make a superfood-packed shake. From chocolate, vanilla, and chai to matcha, coconut acai, and strawberry, you've got endless ways to personalize your cachava. Whether you prefer it straight up or enjoy adding fruit, peanut butter, nut milk, or even iced coffee, with every 2 scoops of cachava, you're getting 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Shop now through December 2nd to get 30% off your first purchase of 2 or more bags with code NEWS at cachava.com. That's 30% off for a limited time at cachava.com, code NEWS.
And to be clear, the way I see this playing out, if the Texans were to make a run at the crown, would depend largely on winning this weekend or 10 days from now, next weekend. If they're able to beat the Colts in Indy, then that last game of the season would potentially be like a tiebreaker scenario where if they finish with the same record, they'd beat them twice and they would have the tiebreaker and they would win the AFC South that way. So, I mean, that changes the number in which they have to reach because it's one more tiebreaker. One thing to note too, when we talk about Texans being a playoff team, they now have potential tiebreakers over the Ravens and the Bills, who a lot of people feel like are going to be in the mix. And they're only a game now behind the Bills. So, I mean, it's not a foregone conclusion that that doesn't come into play. A date with Kansas City, maybe you know, that's another opportunity to earn another tiebreaker. So
getting the win against KC would be huge. And I think that having the win over the Ravens when they were down is great because that's a team that's surging right now. I think they're in a similar position to us where they had a really rough go of it. They're facing a lot of injuries early. That's a big thing that's affecting them. But that's a team that I think could, you know, and their division's wide open. So there's a lot of things that could, you know, happen with them. So having the tiebreaker there is massive. I'm super high on this Texans team regardless of who they're playing, because I think this defense has shown this like last season. Obviously, you had the Vikings game. You had a few games where the defense kind of felt like they got outclassed, but like so far this season, this bend don't break is what they're playing. So there's going to be plays like even in this game, 4th and 27, given up to the Bills is crazy. It definitely put my heart on a string there for a second. I was really stressed out about that, but. You know, playing that bend don't break style of defense, the Texans defense, I don't think has truly been outgunned or outmatched by anyone by any fault of their own. I think the offense has put them in some awful positions, but the Texans have not lost by more than one score in any game this season. And I don't think that they will. I don't foresee an opponent that can test that. So
I don't know what that is statistically, like as far as like what's the most one score games the team has been in a season, but I gotta believe the Texans are gonna flirt with it.
Last season the Chiefs went 11-0, I want to say, in one score games, and the Texans are sitting right now at 8-1 score games this season. They've gone 3-5, so they're gonna need. And I spoke to that earlier this season as the one score games started piling up. And they've started doing it, obviously, but they're going to need to win one score games. That's like pretty much what's going to be the difference between that, this being a playoff team like I think it is and not. So I do think that that's going to play into it. We have a few comments to work through on Instagram still, so I'll work through those.
Keep them coming.
There was one. I'll do this one. Nico, I think, has come over here. So I posted it up.
We appreciate you, Nico.
With Mills being more of a primarily a one read QB, do you think Nick Cayley keeps the same scheme with CJ, like moving the pocket, quick pass game? I think those are all things that we've been begging him to do with CJ. I think that the source of it really was poor offensive line play. And they spoke to it in this game today. I mean, Davis Mills at times was getting the ball out in like 2 seconds. And CJ Stroud, whether you blame the tendency of him to hang out of the ball, you know, on needing to play hero ball because the offensive line's so bad or whatever you do, his time to throw, especially early in the season, was just not great. So you want to give him opportunities to get going by putting him in a position to get the ball out really quickly. And those are some of the ways that you do it. So I think, I mean, I said it earlier, I think a lot of the ways that this offense has progressed, we'll see CJ step into an offense that maybe makes a couple of adjustments based off of like his strengths and weaknesses. But for the most part, I think he steps into a ready-made offense that has progressed to a point where we can expect to see him do better on based on the way that the offensive line configuration has changed alone. So I feel really good about that. But Tom, how do you feel about it?
Well, I think this is something that they were starting to incorporate with CJ before he got hurt. I don't know if how much y'all remember, but CJ was able to move around a little bit and was cooking a little bit in that Denver game before he got injured. That's kind of how they got on top. I really feel like he had a front row seat to it tonight. So he had the earbud in. I got to believe some of that's actually really good for a quarterback to sit back and see it. And he'll probably speak to it next week. You know, if he balls out, he'll be like, look, I got a chance to sit back and watch the game and watch what we were doing and watch this play kind of unfold from the other side to have a better understanding of what's going on from the outside. Obviously, you know, you've got the tunnel vision in the helmet, you know, staring down, you know, the barrel of the gun, as they say, where, you know, he got to see it, you know, kind of from the sideline and kind of take it in that way. I really think like we're going to see a better version of this offense going forward week in and week out.
I think that, I mean, Davis Mills on the Prime post-game interview spoke to like Nick Caley progressing as an offensive play caller and said that like he thinks he's felt more confident as the season has gone on in what Nick Caley's doing in that way. So I think that the adjustments we'll have to see it play out, but I think that he can make those adjustments. Someone in the Instagram comment says, low key still feels like Bobby is running the show. I don't know if that sentiment is too widespread anymore. That's been something that's been pretty commonly spoken. There's some people who said they wish Bobby was back early in the season, but those are gross overreactions, I feel like. And I think that while I was patient, I think Tom had the appropriate level of patience and understanding on this, because I was like, I'll give it till the bye week. And Tom is like, well, I think it's going to need a little more time than that. And so far, Tom has kind of held true to that, and we've seen Nick Caley develop as a play caller. So I think there will be mistakes. He's a rookie play caller. There's going to be things that go wrong. But so far, the past two or three weeks, I think he's shown the flashes, or he's actually outright shown his progression as a play caller. And the missing piece right now, in my opinion, is CJ Stroud. I think that they've ironed out the offensive line. I feel a lot better about that going into the next few weeks. Davis Mills, I don't feel bad about him. I just think that what takes this offense to the next level is seeing a CJ Stroud that had shown signs of development, has had time away from it, has had time to recover from his shell shock of not having an offensive line, and can now come in fresh and ready to play in what, you know, I feel like we were promised at the beginning of the season from Nick Caley, but it obviously took a few weeks to build. So, I mean, I feel a lot better about it. There's another comment here. It says, best defense in the league made Josh Allen look like a scrub. We hadn't talked about it a whole lot. We have talked about it some. This defense notched 8 sacks, 3 takeaways, just an insane game. Which performance stood out to you the most? Because obviously, I think I'll say aside from Will Anderson Jr., because I feel like everyone's answer is going to be Will Anderson Jr. But which defensive performance stood out to you the most?
I don't know that everyone would say Will Anderson Jr. Danielle Hunter had just equally as impressive a game from the other side. I think he's just a little bit more quiet about it. The guy that I think gets lost, but shouldn't get lost, is Kalen Bullock. Like, this is a dude that's quietly just racking up takeaways. And I think he tied Donta Robinson for the most takeaways for a guy in his first 2 seasons. So, like, that's crazy. I mean, we talk all day about Kamar Lassiter and Derek Stingley Jr., and Kalen Bullock is just quietly going about his business, just, you know, racking up takeaways and playing good defense. So, for me, it's probably Kalen Bullock.
I think that the whole front four did really well. If we're speaking to guys who, like, maybe their performance didn't stand out in the same way on paper, but, like, it stood out to me, I look at Azeez Al-Shaair. People have been pretty up and down with him. I think he's been pretty – one of the more steady parts of that linebacker room. But the way he showed up, I think, really helped out today. He obviously tipped the ball that Kalen Bullock picked off the first time. It felt like he was everywhere on the field throughout the game. Once any play that did break past the first level, he was there in the vicinity at least to make it stop. So I feel really good about him. I agree with you, Danielle Hunter. My initial thought when I asked the question was Kalen Bullock. It's a guy who, and you know, I spoke to it this offseason and going into this season. this is his breakout season. Like you have to prove that you can do it more than once. That's when you break out. And I think a lot of people didn't agree with my definition of that, but it is true. And there was a lot of points early this season where I was like, maybe Kalen Bullock is just really young and inexperienced. Maybe he needs more time to get there. And now we're finally starting to see him get there and be the level of safety that we all kind of decided he was after his rookie season. But and not by, you know, being able to develop in that over time by having the help that he needs. I mean, he's been playing alongside MJ Stewart for most of the season. Stewart's out. I think Jalen Mills was starting next to him.
Jalen Reed
was out there. He started next to him, and Jalen Mills got some reps. That safety room is a huge concern, but on a defense like this, it's something you can kind of get away with just having one really good safety and some other guy who can stand in there. To be fair, I mean, I think they both, you know, stood in and did their job to an extent. I didn't think they had any egregious plays, but that's certainly a room that I think the Texans will be looking to improve this offseason, at least. But it's something you can kind of get by with now. Looking at the defense as a whole, how does it feel to see? So I think a lot of people see Josh Allen and they go, oh no, this Texans defense has finally met their match. What was your feeling going into this matchup? Like, what do you think made you think, okay, this could be a tough matchup? Was it just Josh Allen, or like, what was it about this? Because I'm looking at it, and as I was watching the game, I was like, man, they have Keon Coleman as a healthy scratch. Khalil Shakir is like quite literally the only wide receiver they have outside of Gabe Davis, if we're looking at names that we recognize. And, you know, obviously Josh Palmer, but these are all like third and fourth string guys that are just kind of strung together. It's a very Tom Brady-esque receiving core where it's just kind of like not a lot going for it. Was there anything that was supposed to be scary about this team? Like, I think the Bills have a reputation, but what concerned you going into this matchup, and how did that play out for you?
So my concern with Josh Allen was that, you know, he had been asked about it because last year it was arguably his worst game in, you know, what was like an MVP type season. It was against the Texans. They lost. And, you know, during the week they asked him, hey, you know, what happened there? And he's like, man, they kicked my butt. You know, I didn't play well, and they beat me up, you know, credit to them. He talked about, you know, them being over aggressive and trying to use that against them. And for whatever reason, I believe the Texans just really have his number. I don't know. I feel like every quarterback's got that one team, right? Where it's just like, I just don't play well against them. Something against that defense, something against the way they do stuff. Obviously, the weapons, he didn't have the weapons that you would think would be enough. Dalton Kincaid, his number one tight end, was out. Keon Coleman was a healthy scratch for missing like meetings and stuff like that. So he's got like issues there. They talked about it in the broadcast. There wasn't enough vertical threat. Khalil Shakir can be that guy, but I think anytime you put him on, you know, Kamari or Derek Stingley, you kind of neutralize him. So they tried to like get him the ball in the backfield, which worked a little bit. If I was worried about anything, it was James Cook. James Cook is one of those running backs that can really, you know, in the passing game can really beat you up. You know, Christian McCaffrey light, where, you know, yeah, he could rush for 100 yards, but he might catch for 100 yards too. So if there was a guy that I was like circling, you know, on a dry erase board, it was James Cook. And I thought that, you know, that would be an issue. Him through the air and maybe Josh Allen with his legs, I thought he'd run more like in the right direction instead of the wrong direction. But that four-man front of the Texans was just in all the right places. He really looked very, very inept. And it's weird to see a guy that talented be that inept.
Yeah, and like that was one of the reasons why at the beginning of the episode I said I kind of felt the way I did about the matchup, was that like Josh Allen wasn't the concern to me based off of how they've managed him before. And like that one of the reasons I mentioned Azeez Al-Shaair is like who stood out to me. He was consistently the spy, and he consistently kept Josh Allen in front of him. So Josh, I think, had one or two scrambles, but outside of that, didn't really have a lot of opportunities to move. So when you disable, or when you like, you know, mitigate Josh Allen, what are you left with? Obviously, James Cook stepped up and had that touchdown, but the Texans' run defense is stout. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of opportunities. So then it became, you know, players out of the backfield and such was really what it came down to. So overall, going into this game, I was like more concerned with the name of the Bills, but I can't for the life of me think of like what about the Bills, as especially as the matchup came out, I was like, so you mean to tell me they're 31st in run defense and just really okay at pass defense? And I mean, I started to think, is it really that big of a deal that Davis Mills is going into this game? I think it's one of those games that I think a lot of people maybe overestimated because of their name and who they are. I mean, the Bills are a good team, so I don't think – it's hard to believe that you could overestimate them, so I don't know if that's the right word. But, oh, well.
To be fair, they just came off a game where they beat a Tampa team that, you know, the Texans – you know, fought tooth and nail down to the wire. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I guess I see it, but I was like, as the game was going on, I was like, what was there to be worried about? Because I like couldn't see it. I didn't really know. But what I want to look ahead to is next week. So as you guys know, I'm going to put it out right now if you don't know. We're kind of in like this, we're trying to move away from the preview recap format. So a lot of it will be more live. And we're going to get people, if you're interested, we're looking for contributors to kind of work with us to put out short form videos to cover the, you know, topics each week. And I'll be putting out videos that are a little shorter too. But Tom and I want to try and like go through both matchups and just talk Texans. It's kind of the goal of the podcast. And having y'all involved as we have these talks is really great because you guys spark conversation and make us feel really good to know that there's other people that like Texans that are up at this hour of the night to talk about it. But just really quickly, the Texans have the Colts next week. And I want to say that it's in Indianapolis, but I'm not sure.
It is. It is.
100%. It is in Indianapolis. So how do you feel going into that matchup with what we know now?
I mean, it's going to be a great game. Like, look, I want so bad for Indy to be exposed. But it's hard to deny what Jonathan Taylor's doing. He's on one of my fantasy teams, my dynasty team. He's carrying me to a chip, you know, so I have to appreciate what he's doing. I hope that the Texans are able to look good on offense because I feel like what's not talked about the Colts a lot is their defense. Their defense has been really good. They've shut down some pretty good offenses so far. And, you know, that's kind of how they beat you, right? They wear you down with the run game and they keep you off the board. Then they make you chase, make you one-dimensional. And now, you know, you're throwing interceptions. They take the ball away and they're running up the score. So, I still feel really confident in this Texans team coming off of those wins, coming off of that high, and then they get their captain back, their QB back, and I could see the last time CJ went into Indy, he got a really big dub. So I could see him doing it again.
Yeah, and that's what I'm kind of wanting to see. I mean, to me personally, I think the key is what I've learned from this Bills matchup is they want to neutralize Danny Dimes. He's the kind of guy, you know, Indiana Jones wants to – he gets a lot of touchdowns on the ground running it. So contain him and make him, I think it's similar to Trevor Lawrence. You want to make him beat us. So you want to neutralize Jonathan Taylor and you want to make them, you know, make them get after us with Danny Dimes passing and then constrict him in that way. Just like, you know, basically make them win in a way that they, I mean, I think Danny Dimes has done really good supplementing what the Colts do on offense, but you want to make him the sole thing that can win them the game and then shut him down is basically how I see it going. I think we have time for one more topic before we kind of bring this thing to a close. So Joe Mixon was recently, Ian Rapoport reported that he's done for the season. This has been reported by other outlets within the local media. It's not like the best kept secret ever. Joe Mixon quoted it and said,
hold on, who reported it in the local media?
John M. Alexander said that they've been reporting for weeks that he's basically done in the Chronicle, which is paywalled. So I don't know who is seeing it, but
Did you see Joe Mixon's reply to said comment?
Yeah, and Joe Mixon quoted a tweet, said, "You don't know me better than I know myself." Like, yeah, don't act like you, whatever. Joe Mixon basically was like, "I don't think you know what you know because I'm not done." What do you make of all that? Do you think that, because if he doesn't play the rest of the season, I have trouble believing that he plays for the Texans again.
Oh, I agree. I think that, you know, he's probably on the wrong side of 30 and that's, it's time to move on. However, if he says that he's going to play again this season and he's been like following the team the way he's following the team, like, I don't know if you follow him on Twitter, but, you know, he's supportive of the team. Like, if I was a guy that knew I wasn't going to play for this team again, why would I be
out of the team? Yeah.
Why would I care? You know, and maybe, you know, this is the where he wants to be even after the fact. Like, if they you know, decide, hey, we're not going to pick up your option or whatever, or however his contract works. He sure sounds like a Texan right now on social media.
I think he'd love to be here. I think that is a desire. As much as some people might think the allure of the Texans has gone away based off of what we've seen this season and last season, I don't think it has. I think that if I was Joe Mixon, I'd want to be on the Texans, especially if you view the Texans running back room as one of the problems that's led to where they're at, and you think that Joe Mixon is the solution, then yeah, him being it would be great. The question is, can he? And here's the comment, you know, I didn't see that Ian Rappaport replied back, but he basically said, "Prove me wrong." So I think that
Brandon's saying that I wish he said that.
Oh, I wish. Oh, okay. Yeah, I wish he would have too then. So I guess he didn't tweet that back. But I mean, Brandon raises a valid question. Can we trust him to be, you know, RB1 again and stay healthy? Right now we're relying on Nick Chubb to be the complement to Woody Marks. So I don't know if health is something we can afford to be picky on. I think if Joe Mixon's back and he's viewed as being 100% and like can play and is cleared, I think it's very clear that he should be given a role in this room. What that is with what we've seen from Woody Marks and Nick Chubb, I don't know. But I mean, I don't think that, I mean, having a three-headed monster like that to me is tough to see as a bad thing. But I do think regardless that, you know, he'll basically be playing for the opportunity to play for the team next year. Because if it doesn't go well, then you can save $8 million by moving on from him. The draft, you know, you're in a position where you have so few holes that you need to fix in this team now that you can legitimately throw a high draft pick at running back and be fine. Like, you just need to get, depending on how you view it, you need to get a left guard. I'd prefer to get a left guard so that you can move on from Trent Brown and put Titus Howard back at right tackle. So, I mean, is he done in Houston? I think if he doesn't play this year, or if he plays this year and doesn't play well, yeah, he's done. I think it'd be tough to believe this team brings him back. So
I would rather have him over Dario Bungawale, tell you that.
Oh, yeah. But at that point, you're like, the Texans are not the kind of team to hold someone in a position when they could do better elsewhere.
Well, he's still getting reps is my point. He's still getting reps is my point.
Well, yeah, but like he could be a starting running back somewhere else, unless there's no one else that wants him, in which case, yeah, sure. I would keep him at the right price. But oh well, that's all I have to say about it. We didn't get any new information. Rappaport kind of spun it like it was he's done for the season. That's been the vibe around him pretty much since like 3 weeks ago. So it's not new information, in my opinion. If anyone who keeps up with the Texans closely already pretty much felt that way, anyone who's a Texans fan that I know has already dropped Joe Mixon from fantasy and has not really thought about him. I mean, I occasionally forget that Joe Mixon's on the team.
No, you don't.
I obviously remember
don't lie.
He came back and put up a meaningful performance. I do. I legitimately, like, I'm like, okay, well, we've got Nick Chubb. We've got Dario Gumbawale, Woody Marks. Okay. And then Damian Pierce is gone now. By the way, RIP to Damian Pierce and his time on the Texans. Tom
went out.
As the Damian Pierce fan club president, do you have some words to say as we remember his time with the Texans?
I will always be fond of 2022. I think I'll be catches on somewhere else. I really do. I think that guy.
I hope he catches on.
I think that guy just basically said, hey, I'll be whatever you want me to be. You know, he was the perfect employee. You know, anybody else could have been disgruntled, like, hey, trade me, get me out of here. You know, you basically just phased me out of this team. I'm like sparingly used. Sometimes I don't even suit up. You know, he could have been bitter. He could have been all those things. He was not. He was very professional. And unless I hear differently, you know, didn't have anything negative to say about, you know, being let go or anything like that. Like I said, I hope he catches on somewhere else.
I do too. Wish him the best. I think there's some Chiefs fans that were like, he would instantly be the best running back in our room, which I'm not sure if I agree with, but I mean, more power to you. I'd love to see him do well. Is he better than Pacheco? Is he better?
If they're always hurt, then the answer is yes.
Yeah, I guess so.
I think that's why they feel that way. They're always injured.
I can't think of many players that have been on this team that I would not wish the best in another endeavor. So I'm glad they finally let him go instead of holding him in a role
hostage. Not getting any,
you know, like, let him go find a team that wants to pay him to actually play is my thought on it. So I'm interested to see if he clears waivers and who's going to sign him. But maybe he'll clear waivers and someone's looking to sign him to a better contract. But happy for him. But on that note, thanks for tuning in, y'all. Tom, do you have anything left to say before we bring this thing to a close?
Three in a row, baby. I mean, train keeps rolling. What I would say about this game, if there was a word to describe this game, it was absolute punishment. Punishment would be the word. The Buffalo Bills came out of this game incredibly beat up. Like, we talked about all the sacks, but I mean, there was injuries everywhere. I think their right tackle played, you know, injured the entire game, and he was just getting cooked. I want to say a linebacker, you know, had a shoulder thing. There was a DB with a concussion. I mean, it just was like injury. Cook was in the tent. Allen was banged up. I mean, Buffalo went home beat up.
They did. I agree with you. I think if I had a final word to say, it's that one out of two. One out of two is done. As I've talked about the schedule, the Texans should beat the Cardinals, Raiders, and Chargers. They really just need to split the four games between the Colts, Chiefs, and Bills. They've beaten the Bills, which I thought was the easiest of those matchups. So now they just need to win either against the Chiefs or against the Colts. And then they're in a prime position to, in my opinion, finish with at least 10 wins and finish strong. I would hope they could pull a couple more wins and maybe get a little higher. I've said that they're an 11-win team this season, in my opinion, and that's still very feasible, surprisingly enough, as we stand. So I'm excited to see what they can do, and I'm excited for some divisional football. I'd love to see them win this one, because then we can say that for the third year in a row, DeMeco Ryans has never been swept by a divisional opponent. So he's done quite a bit of sweeping himself, but never been swept.
It's crazy that fans want him out. And he's dominating.
I don't understand it. I'm not one of those fans, and I think that a lot of those fans are pretty delusional at this point. But I think there's high hopes. I think that this team is in a very good spot, and I think that that's happened recently. I didn't think the team was in a very good spot like 3 or 4 weeks ago, but we've reached that point where they're in a good place. I feel good about it. But thanks for tuning in. As always, I have been James Roy. You can find me at James Roy NFL, wherever you get your social media. Oh, look, from Chile. My sister was stationed in Chile, just a while back, but she got moved from there recently. But she had fun down there. So thank you for having a country that my sister had fun in. It's good stuff. anxious up in Chile. And then Tom is TC Tom 1 on Instagram and Third Coast Tom on Twitter. And we are the bullpen, the number one veteran run Texans podcast in Chile, it turns out. So probably the number one Texans podcast in Chile, who knows. But thanks for tuning in. As always, stay classy, Houston. Vamos Texans.
Thanks for tuning in to The Bullpen, a Texans podcast. Please like, comment, subscribe, and follow along for more Texans talk from The Bullpen.